Hey, this episode is brought to you by Bob's Containers. Bob's Containers is the leader in shipping container housing, modular solutions, and more. It's a no-brainer with Bob's Containers. Turn your backyard into a profitable machine with a quick Airbnb, a backyard office, or something more. We also make shipping container offices, container restrooms, laboratories, anything you can dream of. We'll containerize a solution for you. So check us out at bobscontainers.com or give us a call, 833-265-3269. Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Vineyard Sun. Vineyard Sun is a local Austin company that makes quality sunglasses made from sustainable materials. You can see their styles on vineyardsun.com or follow them on Instagram at vineyard_sun.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Moon Tower Business Podcast. This is your host, Joseph Obell. And today I have the pleasure of speaking to Lindsay Leverton, who is the author of Not Another Self-Help Book. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Hello. Hello, Joseph. I'm thrilled to be here. You're looking handsome today.
Thank you so much. You're looking beautiful yourself.
Thank you. I like I was telling you before you hit record, I even put on lipstick for you. So it's rare that I put on lipstick. So you should feel very special.
I do. You look great. I'm happy to have you here today. And maybe we'll just get started by kind of just having you introduce yourself to listeners and talk a little bit about your background and kind of your experiences prior to writing your book.
Yeah, not a loaded question at all. And I'm going to try to make it very succinct. So Lindsay Leverton, I'm a single mom of 11-year-old twins. I have two rescue dogs, a rescue hedgehog who is blind somehow. By day, I'm the director of wealth management at a boutique financial planning firm in downtown Austin. I'm reporting to you live from my office right here on 6th Street. Never thought I would work on 6th Street, you know, just never would have planned that for my life, but I love it. Love what I do. And then when I'm not doing wealth management or the mom thing, I started writing this book 4 years ago, believe it or not. So when you have kids and a full-time job, it's very hard to get anything done other than those two things. And so it took me a really long time, 3 years to write it and then a year of editing. And then before that, I graduated from college. I started touring full-time as a singer-songwriter, recording artist, mostly in the contemporary Christian music world. And so I came out in 2009, lost my career, started waiting tables, got recruited into the financial services industry. And 14 years later, here we are.
Gotcha. You've written quite a few songs. It's over 100 songs.
Yes. I have lost count. I think maybe 150. I'm not sure. Half of them are absolute garbage. But I started writing songs when I was 17.
Wow. Wow.
And I'm 41 and proud of it.
That's awesome. And are you from Austin originally?
I moved here when I was 17, but I grew up in Midland, Texas, and then moved here in the middle of my junior year in high school because of my dad's job. And I had no friends when I got here. The basketball gym was closed. I was a huge athlete growing up. And that's when I picked up my mom's guitar and started playing and writing songs. And I never put it down.
Nice.
But, you know, I've been here. I feel like I've been here long enough where I can call myself an Austinite. I don't know if it's a 20-year, you know, requirement or what. What about you? Did you grow up here?
I didn't. I grew up in Brownsville.
Yeah, I know where Brownsville is.
I've been here for about 14 years, so I can serve.
You're close. Okay, so maybe it's 14
years. I've hit the 20-year mark yet, but I feel like I've earned my stripes.
I think so. I think you have.
Great. So your book, let's talk more about that. What inspired you to write the book? And who's your target audience?
Oh, goodness. What inspired me to write it was the need for survival, quite honestly. I couldn't not write the book. I felt at the beginning of COVID just this very clear push. It's time to write the book. I just kept hearing that message. It's time to write the book. And I'd been writing for so many years. So it's not like I just started day one, laptop open, start typing away. It was a culmination of a bunch of different writing over the, you know, last 5-10 years, journaling, things that I have learned over the past few years, and then random anecdotes. I love a good story or illustration, you know, that relates to real life. So I wrote the book, I think, to survive. It really helped me survive COVID. It was a very traumatic time for me and my family at the time. And the book was the medicine. And I didn't know if anyone was ever going to read it. I didn't start writing with the end in mind. I was writing and I thought, if only my kids read this, that'll be a win, you know? And then it started to blossom into this unbelievably beautiful work of art. And I'm more proud of the book than anything I've ever created, including my kids, because I didn't create them. They're adopted, right? So, and then what was your second question? Oh, target audience. You know, we're supposed to give a very clear target, right? Especially you and I being in business. It's all about who's your target audience. And it can't be everyone with a heartbeat, because then you're trying to be everything to everyone. So you're nothing to anybody. So ideally, I would love for anyone that is a human with a heartbeat to read it. But the true target audience is most likely not your target audience, which is totally okay. I find that like 30, 40, 50s women, emotionally exhausted, typically, you know, full-time working mom or working inside the home, full-time dealing with all these kids, and you're just kind of stuck. You've tried everything else. You've tried therapy. You've tried numbing. You come out of the pandemic and you're like, is this really all it is? How am I going to keep going when life keeps happening? How am I not going to be pelted by these waves of grief and trauma? And when life does what life does, which is throw shit your way, and then you get a reprieve. And sometimes life is easy and happy, but it's always going to be mixed with a little bit of shit. So I wanted to download in this book tools that helped me start reframing my relationship with pain in all its forms, not just emotional, physical, psychological, et cetera.
Yeah, it's all about how you frame things and how you can, you know, make light of a good situation or a bad situation. I'm sorry. And so I think that, yeah, I mean, this could be a great book for people dealing with different things in their life and hear stories that you experienced. And you have a kind of an interesting structure for the book where you kind of have, it's broken up into three parts. Mm-hmm. I know you have like some pages that are kind of like coloring book for adults.
And then you have songs. You did your research. I am impressed. Yes. So I actually was talking to someone yesterday in the literary world, and she's been helping authors for 30 years. And she said, in my career, I've never heard of anyone laying a book out like you did. And so, you know, my brain is a little different than the normal human. And I wanted it to be an experience. Too often when I pick up a book, I feel like I'm supposed to get to a destination. You know, I want to read it as fast as I can, because who knows when I'll pick it up again. So I kind of rush from chapter 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. This book is quite dense, and it's not something you just thumb through and read over a 3-day cruise. Maybe you can, but it's pretty heavy at certain points, because we're talking about the gift. Every chapter is the gift of blank, the gift of loss, trauma, tragedy, heartbreak. I mean, not fun stuff. Okay. And so in between every chapter, there are 16 chapters, I designed adult coloring book pages so that after the reader has interacted with a certain chapter, they can doodle, they can draw. It gives time for whatever they read to settle in a little bit. And then I also have included a QR code in between each chapter that takes the reader to one of my original songs that aligns with the concepts in the chapter. Oh, so nice. By the time you're through it, it's really sunk in deep, and you'll notice, because of the music element and the act of doodling or coloring, whatever the case may be, the concepts stick in the brain, I think, longer. And gotcha. There's a bunch of humor scattered throughout, because I if there's one thing I love in life, Joseph, it's making people laugh. It is my passion in life.
Humor is the best medicine.
That's what I think. Humor and music and coloring and come on. And it's, you know, me in a bathtub fully clothed on the cover with a book over my face, drinking a glass of bourbon. That just feels right.
Absolutely. So you give experiences that you had in your life in the book, and you have different stories that you tell. Can you kind of give a few of the, maybe a few examples just that out of the book that you talk about from your life?
Sure, absolutely. So I will highlight, let's see, what do I feel like highlighting? I think I'll highlight, oh, I'm actually about to sneeze. Cedar fever. Is it coming? You might have to cut this out. It's right there. Feel free to leave that in, take it out. I don't care. I've been dying with cedar. So I think for me, I would say the most fresh story that comes to mind is the story about when my dad had triple bypass surgery, and he was supposed to be in the operating room for 3 hours, at least 3 hours. We were told at a minimum going to be 3 hours. And after about 2 hours, the patient care coordinator, I think his name was, I don't know, Cliff or something. He comes up to me, my brother, my mom, and says, "All right, y'all come this way with me. Please follow me." Of course, we had, you know, booze and dinner all over the table at the hospital, eating and drinking our feelings like one does. And we follow Cliff, and me and my mom and brother aren't saying a word, but we're all thinking the same thing. Like, it is too soon. He must have died on the table. And so Cliff leads us to this room. We're meandering throughout the hospital, and he walks us into a room that just says, patient care on the door. Walks in, there's a couch, there's one table, and there is a box of Kleenex on the table. And he doesn't say anything to us, does not give us any indication that the surgery is even over, that it was a success, nothing. Cliff was not helping us out at all. So we sit there, and I talk about this in the chapter titled "The Gift of Waiting." And we sit there for 8 minutes. Now, my dad is my best friend in the whole world. For whatever reason, since I was little, I have just feared his death. Okay. Probably because he's my hero, my best friend. My mom is lovely as well. My brother is great. But my worst fear, I thought, okay, it's coming true. It's going to come true. The doctor's going to come in. So I'm sitting there preparing myself. I'm watching my brother and my mom prepare themselves as well. And we are small talking like no one has ever small talked, right? Because nobody wants to talk about the gigantic elephant in the room. So we're shooting the shit, and we're in there for 8 minutes. And I had this overwhelming sense of peace, which was very surprising. As I'm sitting in this literal waiting room and a metaphorical waiting room, I had this peace wash over me, and I knew that we were going to be okay. Like I just felt like he was not going to make it. And I had this strong belief in my family that me, my brother, and my mom were going to get through it, and we were going to be stronger. And the panic just left. And I had accepted the fate that he may not, you know, he may never be with us again. So after 8 minutes, and I know because I looked at my clock on my phone, the doctor comes in, just chipper as a, you know, door greeter at Walmart. "Hey, all right, the surgery was a success. We did da 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 da." And I didn't hear anything else he said, of course. I didn't know if I wanted to hug him or wring his neck, you know, or go find Cliff and throw him off the second floor. But he was great. And I got to see my dad in the ICU as he was recovering, and he was all doped up on medicine. And the first thing he said to me is, "So you're getting married." I said, "Yes." And he goes, "Well, I'm so excited to come." And I didn't know that my parents were going to come to my wedding. It was at the beginning of COVID in April. And I was marrying a lady, and they're very conservative and religious. And they came and they were on the front row in their car. I got married at a drive-in movie theater. If you're bored, the wedding went viral. You can Google me wedding. You'll find it. But that's one story that came to mind. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. And that, I mean, in that scenario, 8 minutes is a very long time.
Oh, yes. In like dog years or whatever, waiting years, it felt like an eternity. And it did. It felt like time stood still, but also it'd been 100 years that I'd been in there.
And what do you think it was that kind of triggered that like peace that you felt and acceptance of the situation?
It's interesting because I know this is a business podcast, right? And I have been on several podcasts that are not business related. And so I talk more openly about my faith on a business podcast. You know, I wonder, is that something I can talk about? But you're the host, you asked. I really do believe that it was my faith, that my faith has transitioned and been transformed over the years. As I write about in the book, my journey of growing up in evangelical Christianity and going into full-time ministry, all the while having this secret. And it took years to walk through reconciling my faith with my sexuality. But it was in that moment that I had that peace that I'm not a huge fan of the Bible, but there are some amazing verses. And there's one verse that talks about, you know, the peace that surpasses all understanding. And it was a very supernatural peace that I felt. And I just, now I feel that in the midst of going through active pain and trauma, which is really interesting.
That's very interesting. You're a parent.
Yes.
I'm a new parent. I have a
11-month-old nice. Son. Congrats.
Thank you very, very much. He's turning a year next month and we're really excited about him. But in your book, do you have any, do you share any experiences or lessons as a parent and things that you've experienced?
Oh my gosh. Yes. That's some of my favorite material. You know, I mean, just wait. And you said you have a son.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. As your son gets older, especially when these little humans can start talking, you just write down everything. It's fascinating. You won't remember it if you don't write it down. So yes, I share quite a bit of stories about parenting and about, you know, just having kids and the shit show that it can be. And you look at these kids and you're like, this is my circus. And these are my monkeys. You know, I write this, I don't remember what chapter this is in actually, but I write about, oh, it's in the gift of unanswered prayers. You know, cue Garth Brooks song. But my daughter Annabelle, she must have been 3 years old. And I can't find her, which is always terrifying because you think she's going to be, you know, in a big vat of mayonnaise in the pantry or something. And she is in her room bawling her eyes out. You would have thought somebody had, you know, tried to murder her or something. She was just screaming, so sad. So I walk in the room, I just lay down in the bed with her. I'm like, baby girl, what is it? I mean, these were big crocodile tears. She goes, I just want a pet leopard. And I was like, come again? You know, because they can't talk clearly. So who knows what they're saying? She says, I just want a pet leopard. And I go, well, baby, you know, we can't have leopards as pets. Why? I just don't know. She is crushed as if all the pets had died at the same time. And I go, well, baby, it's against the law, first of all. So it's illegal. She's three. She has no idea what that means. She goes, I don't care. It's not fair. And I'm like, you know what? It's not fair. And it's better that you learn at 3 years old that there's going to be times when you beg for things and you're not going to get them. And that's okay. Because if I brought a leopard into our home, Annabelle, it would most likely eat you. And she just cried herself to sleep. But just like, you can't get those moments back, you know?
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Funny.
You don't even look tired and you don't even have bags under your eyes. So what is your kid? Just a magical sleeper?
I did wake up at 5 a.m. this morning, but I went to bed.
Why?
Well, my son woke us up at 5 a.m.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. They're such turds. Yeah, people are like, children are a blessing. Like, yes, they are. They're also turds.
Yeah, he's walking now, so he's just getting into,
you know. Oh yeah, he'll be all over everything.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's
though.
Exciting.
He's a great kid. So talk about a little bit about the experience about writing the book. You said it was a process of a few years in the making. And what is that like? You wrote it on your laptop. How does that process work out for you?
So have you seen Rain Man?
Yes.
Have you seen A Beautiful Mind?
Yes.
Okay. Imagine that those movies got married and then they tried to write a book. So imagine me in my garage with a gigantic whiteboard. I mean, the biggest whiteboard that you have ever seen. And I start brain mapping the whole book. And I worked for years with an amazing publishing company who ended up publishing the book, Greenleaf. They're local in Austin. And through that work, we started to design the table of contents. And then we started to break it up into the three parts and then pulling different chapters into each of those parts and then designing this brain map on this whiteboard with which stories that I want to include, which quotes, which anecdotes. And once I had it on the huge whiteboard, you're talking 10 different colors, arrows. I mean, it looked like, you know, CSI when you walk into the murderer's cave and there's all these strings and stuff. Yeah, that's kind of what it looked like. And once I had that, then I scheduled once a quarter, I would run away from my family and I would go alone to an Airbnb, usually a RV or something small. And I would lock myself in the Airbnb from Friday afternoon until Sunday, whenever they kicked me out. And I would just type. I would type. I would go sit outside and type. I would go back inside and type. At night, that was fun because I would have some wine. And that's when I got some of my best material. So I only got to work on it probably 4 weekends a year, which is why it took so long. And then I ended up writing 262,000 words. In 3 years. A book is supposed to be between 60 and 90,000 words, Joseph. And so, you know, War and Peace wasn't going to probably sell. So that's why the editing process took a year. It went through 6 different layers of editing with 6 different editors. Wow. And that was hard because, you know, in one chapter, I had 3 stories and they said, choose one. Like, how do I decide between the story with Sandra Bullock and Wynonna Judd? Are you kidding me? Like, how do I cut one of those? But the process, it was really fascinating for me because it was so healing. Even the process of writing was so incredibly healing. I don't know if I could have made it through COVID genuinely. And I would tell you more if I could. But I'm in the middle of a divorce. And so there's not much I can say. But I don't think I would have survived COVID and the trauma that we experienced as a family at the hands of mental illness if I had not been writing this book.
Do you think writing during COVID, was it easier to write during COVID? Was it like just kind of your circumstances at the time? Like, was it helpful to at that time to write or versus just like, if you started the book today?
Oh, gosh. Yes. Yes. It was so helpful. And a lot of what I wrote, I feel like I got a download. So when I was writing songs, you know, I have a friend that says, you're really a song waiter, not a songwriter, because I don't sit down and I'm going to write a song. I usually wait and I get this download of a song. Sometimes I get the full song, lyrics, music, all that. Other times I get the lyrics. Other times I'll get the music first. But being able to put down on paper what had changed my life. And now to be able to share that with people who they may be on their last leg. Like I've got no other options. I don't know what else to try. It's like, you know what, before you completely give up and throw in the towel, try this book. Just read the first chapter and see if it connects with you in some way. And I'm already starting to work on my second book, just with gathering new writing and writing through what I'm going through now. It's always been a really healing activity for me.
Can you talk about what your next book's going to be about?
I don't know yet. That's the beauty of it. And that's how I started writing this book. Originally, I thought it was going to be called The Gift of Pain, because it was born out of my journey of about 15 years with chronic pain all throughout my body, every single day, nonstop chronic pain. Doctors, specialists, tests, but about everything, hypnotherapy. If it was a thing, I was trying it, you know? And so I finally realized there was nothing structurally wrong with me. And I started working with this incredible executive coach who specializes in healing. It sounded super woo-woo, but I was in so much pain for so long with no answers that I would have tried pretty much anything at that point. And the book evolved from The Gift of Pain to 16 chapters about gifts that you would not typically associate with really hard things. So the second book, I have an idea. There will definitely be an element of what it is like to live with someone and love someone with severe mental illness, specifically borderline personality disorder. And you know, finding a way to get free from that and take care of yourself and your family. So I think it'll be an element, but also it could be a children's book about donkeys. I have no idea. I want to write a children's book.
That'd be awesome.
Then maybe your kid can read it someday.
That would be great. I'd definitely get it for him.
It'll only take 4 years. So by the time he can start reading, the timing will be perfect. Because apparently it takes me 4 years to write books.
So your book was released in January?
January 16th, yes. And it was an Amazon bestseller on the day of release. By 2 p.m., I got the word from my team that it hit bestseller. So that was just like, I don't know, dream come true.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you. I know I've fooled everyone. I still can't believe it. I can't believe it's out. It's surreal some days. It really is.
Well, I know you got to get going soon, but before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to share with listeners about the book? Where can folks go to? I know you mentioned Amazon, but where else can folks go to buy it online or in person?
Yeah. So select stores. So I probably wouldn't try to go find it in a store. It would take you a lot less time to just Google Lindsay Leverton, Not Another Self-Help Book on Amazon. You'll have it shipped to you. I think it takes them 2 days. So that's the quickest way. And it will be available on audiobook in about a month. So your best, what I would ask is go to the website, notanotherselfhelpbook.com, throw your email address in there. I don't spam you. I don't even have time to read my emails, much less send you a bunch of emails. But it'll keep you updated on the release of the Audible. A lot of busy people don't have time to read. I'm one of those people. I exclusively listen to audiobooks. And I'm also doing an interview series this year where I release an interview with a badass woman once a month throughout this year. You can get the coloring book on there. And then if you're a social media person, find me on social media, Lindsay Kane Leverton on Instagram. I'm not famous or anything, not an influencer, but I try to post stuff that makes the day a little easier to deal with, if that makes sense.
Very good. I'll put that information in the show notes for listeners to find you and learn more about you. And awesome. Then the final question before we wrap up here is, what's your favorite restaurant in Austin?
Oh, yes. Okay. We don't have time for me to list my top 50. So I'm going to have to go with, this is a hard one, Matt's El Rancho. Okay. You've got the history. It's just a beautiful place. The margaritas are borderline, you know, should be illegal after two. I'm just, you know, on the tables. The queso, that Barb Armstrong dip, it makes me so sick, but I can't stop, won't stop. It's the best place on the planet. Love it. What's yours?
So mine is, I would have to say Nixta Taqueria. It's on the east side.
I've never heard of it. I'm writing it down. How do you spell it?
It's N-I-X-T-A.
Ooh, it sounds too cool for me. Are you sure I can go there? Is it like one of these hipster places that smells like patchouli oil?
It's a little hipster, but it's really good.
I think you'll like it.
Taqueria, yeah.
Taqueria. Me gusta español mucho. Entiendo poquito. Necesito practicar más.
Hablas muy bien.
Oh, gracias. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Likewise, it was an honor to have you on the podcast. And thank you for being here today and sharing your story and a little bit about your book. And I'm excited for listeners to learn more about you. And hopefully we can have you get on the podcast sometime.
I'd love it. I'd love 4 more years for my children's book.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Bye, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Vineyard Sun. Vineyard Sun is a local Austin company that makes quality sunglasses made from sustainable materials. You can see their styles on vineyardsun.com or follow them on Instagram @vineyard_sun.